Hey there, and welcome to Cyberpunk Librarian. I'm Daniel Messer. So in case you didn't get the hint from the last couple of episodes, I spoke at the Tech Phoenix conference on growing your audience for your podcast. They'll post the video for that at some point in the future, and I'll have a link to it on the website. But I wanted to thank Tech Phoenix on this podcast for allowing me the opportunity to talk and for what was actually a wonderful conference. I also got to sit in on a panel of podcasters with some folks I know, like Danny Cutler and Evo Terra. Now, if you ever looked around for podcasting books, you'll see Evo's name come up a couple of times because he literally wrote the book on podcasting. Or at least he wrote one of the best ones on podcasting. Sitting on a panel with people like him and Danny is kind of like being the busboy at the Last Supper. You feel good about being there, but somehow you feel you're utterly superfluous. Anyway, thanks again to Tech Phoenix for a lovely time and for the opportunities to share my love of podcasting. However, that also made this episode a little late. In a way, that's fine, because it also afforded me an opportunity to do something different and fun with the show. See, you can't always have Cyberpunk Librarian and just talk about librarian stuff. Sometimes you have to talk about Cyberpunk too, or at least that's what I think. So, let's talk about the happiest Cyberpunk movie I've ever seen, and I saw it last weekend.
All right, let me get this straight. A man in a kabuki mask attacked you with an army of miniature flying robots.
Microbots? Baymax, tell him.
Yes, officer.
Microbots?
Yeah, he was controlling them telepathically with a neurocranial transmitter. Come on!
I am not fast.
Yeah, no kidding! Go, 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 go!
So Mr. Kabuki was using...
Wait, Disney made a cyberpunk cartoon? Yes, though you may not have caught it at first. This is Cyberpunk Librarian, Episode 25, The Cyberpunk Behind Big Hero 6. I'm Daniel Messer, your friendly neighborhood Cyberpunk Librarian, and welcome back to the show that explores the intersection of libraries and technology, and is all about living that high-tech, low-budget lifestyle. But for this episode, we're going to do something a little fun and a little different, and take a look at one of the best Cyberpunk movies I've seen in a long time, Big Hero 6. So, I don't watch a lot of TV, but I still managed to catch a trailer or two for this movie, and I thought it looked, well, cute. I mean, it's got a big, bouncy, friendly robot thing, and the super smart kid and his super smart friends, and I figured, yeah, I'd take the kids to see this. So, this last Friday, I did. And I was utterly blown away by the cyberpunk background of the film. Now then, if you like cyberpunk, you need to see Big Hero 6. I'm not going to waste your time talking about a movie that sucks, so you can bet that since I'm going to devote an entire episode to Big Hero 6 and the cyberpunk themes that it encompasses, you can bet that I thought the movie was pretty awesome. However, if you like comic book movies, you'll like Big Hero 6 too. You'll also dig it if you're into superhero movies, comedy, animated film, friendship and family stories, and science fiction. It's all there. All those things are there. So make no mistake, it's not just a cyberpunk cartoon. However, there is a lot of cyberpunk in it. And unlike most cyberpunk, with its elements of darkness and shadow worlds and augmented street samurai battles and mega corporations looming in the background that are actually pulling all the strings, Big Hero 6 is the bright side of the genre, where things are actually pretty okay. So let's dive in and explore some of the cyberpunk themes of this film. I promise to keep this spoiler free because, seriously, folks, go check out the movie. I think you're going to like it. So, Big Hero 6. So there are a lot of elements that can go into the making up of a cyberpunk story, but as with any genre, there are certain things that you kind of expect to see, and Big Hero 6 hits a lot of those points, and I'm just going to kind of go over them because it was such a fun film, and I was so blown away by the cyberpunk elements of it because I did not expect that. In case you don't know, Big Hero 6 is actually based very loosely off of a comic book series. See, since Disney bought Marvel Comics a while back, they're really exercising that brand. But as it happens, Big Hero 6 the movie and Big Hero 6 the comic book don't share all that much in common except the title and the names of the characters. So if you are familiar by chance with the Big Hero 6 comic book series and you go to the movie expecting to see that kind of thing, you're going to be sorely disappointed, and I do apologize for that. But I think you'll like it anyway because it's different, but yes, it is fun, and oh, it is so very cyberpunk in nature. So we're going to talk about sort of the three elements that it really hits hard on with the cyberpunk genre, and those three elements are Japanese culture, technology, and cybernetics. Now, I'm not going to spoil anything here because I totally want you to go see this movie. I think you will absolutely love it. But I was so taken with this idea of Disney making what is essentially a cyberpunk movie, but it's the happy version of cyberpunk, which is not something you see on a regular basis. So that was very refreshing. And the movie itself is funny. It's heartwarming. There are sort of the Disney things that they hit with everything like that. So it's, you know, it's sort of like a Tangled or a Frozen, more aimed at the sci-fi nerd than the fantasy nerd, which is sort of the Tangled and Frozen target audience. At least I think it is. So let's talk about these three elements, the Japanese culture, the technology, and the cybernetic type stuff that you expect to see in at least some sort of cyberpunk genre thing. So the Japanese culture, we'll start with that. And this is a staple of many cyberpunk novels and sort of any cyberpunk thing. And this was started by William Gibson himself in the Sprawl trilogy, which you would know as Neuromancer, Count Zero, and Mona Lisa Overdrive. However, he covers a lot of Japanese culture in the Bridge trilogy, which sort of came along right after the Sprawl trilogy. And the Bridge trilogy is Virtual Light, Idoru, and All Tomorrow's Parties. So right there, I mean, the second novel in the Bridge trilogy alone is about a virtual Japanese idol singer, which we actually have now if you know anything about Hatsune Miku. And I'll go ahead and put some stuff in the show notes about that. But the Japanese stuff is quite present in Big Hero 6. The story itself takes place in an amalgamation of a Japanese and West Coast city called San Francisco. And I know that sounds sort of dumb and maybe Disney-esque, but it works. I totally buy this setting of San Francisco because, yes, it is totally San Francisco, but it is also very much Tokyo in nature. And I love the sort of blending of those two cities into this sort of mega city that doesn't really even make any sense. I mean, when we talk about mega cities in most novels, we talk about cities that have merged. They're kind of close together geographically, but not really. So we talk about a mega city that is New York and Boston or something like that, where you can drive from Boston to New York and you'll never leave the city. So that kind of thing. San Francisco doesn't even make sense because you really can't drive from San Francisco to Tokyo. But the setting is believable. You feel like you're in San Francisco and then you feel like you're in Tokyo. So beautiful stuff there. And I love how they carried off that amalgamation, that sort of portmanteau of cities. Not only do you have this blending of a Japanese and West Coast city, you have the main character who is of Japanese descent, and his name is Hiro. Now that's H-I-R-O. We are talking about Japanese language here. Now, Keeping in mind that this movie is very loosely based off a comic book series of the same name, the hero has his own backstory and all of that. But when I see that name, and when I see that name in a cyberpunk setting, I still can't help but think of the lead character in Neal Stephenson's Snow Crash novel, who bears the funny name of Hero Protagonist. And once again, H-I-R-O. So, Hero is the main character. Like I said, he's of Japanese descent, and he is a whiz kid. He is quite adept at robotics, and he is incredibly smart, and he has a brother who is just as smart as he is, if not a little more so. So, yeah, you've got that sort of element. You've got a Japanese main character in a city that is a Japanese amalgamation with San Francisco. Now, moving on, the arch villain of the movie is called Kabuki and wears a Kabuki-style mask. So, once again, this Japanese influence just keeps rolling and rolling, and you'll see more of it throughout the movie. I'm not going to tell you everything. That just kind of ruins everything. But I'll tell you, it's the little details that they get here and there that I really dug on. So, you'll see the Japanese lanterns, for instance, and they'll be swinging from the corners of San Francisco streetcars. So as the streetcars go up and down the sort of picturesque hills of San Francisco, where you know this is San Francisco because of these massive hills and streetcars. Where else does this happen? But there's Japanese lanterns swinging from the corners of the streetcars, and it makes sense, and it's beautiful, and yeah. The Japanese culture is very strong in this movie. You've got to check it out for that, too. So let's talk tech, because you can't have cyberpunk without tech. And I kind of broke this up in my own mind, because there's technology and then there's cybernetics and robot technology. And while the two do kind of meet in the middle, they are sort of treated separately in the film. Of course, you need technology to make robots, but the robots are sort of their own thing. So I'm going to set those aside and we'll talk about them in a few minutes. But let's talk tech. So robots and cybernetic enhancement, they play a definite role in the film, right? But how they are made is very cyberpunk in nature. Now, I caught a glimpse of what was obviously an Apple Bluetooth keyboard paired to what was obviously an iMac that only lacked the Apple logo. But if you know what an Apple Bluetooth keyboard looks like, and you know what an iMac looks like, you're not going to miss them. They're sort of front and center. They're not a character or anything. I don't even accuse anyone of product placement or advertising. It's just that's what they are. So they're there. They're not really selling Apple products, but there's sort of that's sort of the old technology. This is the stuff that's in Hero's garage, which is sort of his workshop as well. But that's sort of the old technology that he has. He also has computers that do 3D computer-assisted drafting. And by 3D, I mean hovering in the air, manually manipulated holographic 3D. So he literally will have designs and schematics hanging in the air above his computer, and he manipulates them with his hands. He uses his hands to zoom in and zoom out and spin them around and twist and look and enhance. Very cyberpunk in nature. He's not wearing any virtual reality goggles. He's just doing it via holography. So that in itself was pretty cool and is definitely a staple of cyberpunk technology. And something else that came up that would have seemed science fiction even 10 years ago, and is now something that libraries and librarians are very interested in today, and that's 3D printing. Now, keep in mind, we're not talking 3D printing as in a MakerBot, where it takes 24 hours to roll out anything of a decent level of complexity. We're talking science fiction level cyberpunk 3D printing. And not only are we printing things quickly, but we're printing things with carbon fiber. If you haven't figured it out yet, the sort of second main character is the robot Baymax. Baymax is the big Stay Puft marshmallow looking thing with the friendly face. And he was created by Hero's brother. So Baymax is actually a medic. He is sort of a nurse. He's not quite a doctor, but he's a nurse. He at least has that level of medical expertise. And so the character of Baymax is there as a healer. So when it comes time for Baymax and Hero to go fight the bad guy, the Kabuki, Baymax is an inflatable pillow. He's not exactly kitted out for fighting. So they need to harden him up. And to harden him up, they do some 3D printed carbon fiber armor. Now, the 3D printer itself is straight out of Cyberpunk. It looks like sort of the thing that they had in the Fifth Element when they put Lilu back together with just a few pieces of her left at the beginning of the film. Great stuff there, and it looked really cool. And, you know, watching this Stay Puft Marshmallow-friendly robot thing become an armored Stay Puft Marshmallow-friendly robot thing, it adds to the hilarity of the film. So, but the 3D printed carbon fiber armor, pretty cool. Now, you can't have tech without power. And one thing that caught my eye is the power supply in this movie, because it's not just hydroelectric and things like that. Though the San Francisco landscape is there, it has been, as I said, Nipponified, or Japanified, if you want to call it that, where the San Francisco's Golden Gate Bridge has a sort of torii structure, like the Shinto shrines. They have the big gates. Those are called torii. And it has that to it. And lofted above the bay and lofted above the bridge and above the city are these wind turbines that are spinning and providing power through the power of the wind. So they're converting wind energy into power. Now, how they're held aloft, they don't really go into that. It almost seems as if they might be lighter than air, maybe helium, maybe hydrogen, maybe, you know, it could just be a hot air balloon or something like that. They don't really get into that, and it's not important. It really isn't important. It's just one of those things that caught my eye, that here is an alternative energy source that is perfect for a city like San Francisco. So, yeah, the power itself is sort of cyberpunk in nature, as it's lofted above the city and brings power down in an attempt to be green. And San Francisco is a very green-looking city. It's very clean. So, let's talk about Baymax for just one second. I don't want to reveal anything that's spoilerific about Baymax, but I've already told you he's a medic, and you can kind of pick that up from the trailers pretty quickly. But Baymax has biomedical sensor scanning and diagnosis, and keeping in mind that he's a robot, and he acts like a robot throughout much of the film. The personality that he has, you can see being programmed. This is not a Johnny Five is Alive kind of situation, though Baymax, his personality does change throughout the film. But the biomedical sensor scanning and diagnosis is quite cool, and it's very cyberpunk in nature. It's almost like the clean version of a street doc. Almost all the technology that's used in Big Hero 6, you can kind of apply to the darker side of cyberpunk and just sort of, you know, if this is what it is on the dark side, then this is what this would be on the light side, which is exactly what Big Hero 6 is. And sort of finally, for the regular technology that you find, there's a character in the movie called Honey Lemon. And Honey Lemon is one of the people that goes to the university where Hero and his brother are going. And she's not as much into robots. She's into chemicals and chemistry. And the chemical tech used by Honey Lemon is, it's not really cyberpunk in nature, but it is fun to watch. And the way that they handle this, because at the outset, no one has any superpowers, though they do pick up superpowers later, and we're going to talk about that in a sec. Her superpower is quite different from the others in that she's not a robotic type person. She's very much a chemist, and that is her thing. And it gives the whole character build up and the sort of super team a different perspective, because they're not just, you know, robots or wearing robot suits. This isn't like a mecha type thing. She uses chemistry as her sort of superpower. And the chemical tech used in Big Hero 6 is very sci-fi in nature, but if you know anything about chemistry, you can see the basis for it. Things like chemicals, when you mix them together and then sort of shock them, they turn into sort of puffy, sticky, nasty things that you don't want to have your hands in because it's going to stink and it's going to be sticky and things like that. That's kind of what she's got, but of course, sci-fied up a bit and super-powered a bit and just absolutely fun to watch. Now, finally, we're going to talk about the cybernetic type stuff. Now, this is most assuredly a staple of cyberpunk genres and cyberpunk movies and cyberpunk books. And that is the sort of smooth and usually synergistic melding of man and machine. Now, we've talked about how robots are a big part of this movie because, after all, one of the main characters is himself a robot. However, as the movie goes on, the other characters eventually acquire superhero outfits. Now, once again, no spoilers here, because if you watch the trailers, you'll see this happen. This is nothing that's a secret or anything like this. And I'm just going to talk about a couple of the superhero outfits, because those are where sort of the cyberpunk thing does kick up a little bit as well. So one of my favorite characters in the movie is Gogo Tamago, who is, yet again, a woman of Japanese descent. So going back there, we've got that Japanese culture sticking its head up again. Now, Gogo Tamago wears an outfit that increases her speed and reflexes, and for all the world, basically gives her Tron-style light bike powers. Now, this is not a ripoff because, after all, Tron is also a Disney movie, but Tron is also a cyberpunk film, too. And this outfit that she has not only gives her these super speed and reflexes, it also has a heads-up display, as do most of the other characters' superhero outfits. And this heads-up display is also very cyberpunk in nature. It does the things that you would expect a cyberpunk HUD to do. So there's targeting information, there's displays of threat levels, and things like that. So once again, the technology, it's right there. You also see it in Wasabi's outfit. Now, Wasabi is not Japanese, strangely enough. It's just his nickname. Now, he wears an armored outfit that projects energy blades like you might find in the Halo series of video games. Now, most people, when they think energy blades, they think lightsabers, Star Wars, but no, this is very different. It's, like I said, it's more the Halo style of energy blades, where these blades are shaped. They have a look to them that is more Halo than Star Wars. Now, that may not sound like something direct out of a cyberpunk film, but this is very sort of akin to the monofilament whips you find in Johnny Mnemonic and also in some of the Shadowrun series of role-playing games and novels. So he too has this heads-up display with targeting information and all of that stuff. And as Baymax gets his new armor, he does too. So these heads-up displays are very cyberpunk in nature. If they weren't a HUD, you could easily see them being part of a cybernetic eye or something like that. Now, as we've said, robots are a big part of the movie, and going back to Baymax for a second, there is a part of the movie where he downloads information from the global electronic grid. Now, in most cyberpunk books and movies and things like that, the internet or the net or the matrix or the grid or whatever it happens to be called is almost a character in and of itself. And this is not a spoiler at all. This is this point where Baymax sort of downloads more information from the global electronic grid is sort of the only time you see the internet make an appearance. So that's kind of different. Usually the internet is sort of a front and main thing. People go surfing on the net, or they run the matrix or something like that. Well, this is kind of refreshing because it's focusing more on an actual character than what is essentially another place within the world. Now, the nanobots, or in this case, the microbots, these are basically micro, you know, small little robots that communicate with each other and with a central computer. Now, one can do some things like moving around, but when you get more of them together, they can connect up, they can build things, and you can control them and stuff like that. Once again, no spoilers here because this is something you will see in, I guess all four trailers. I believe there's four trailers for this movie, and they all sort of show this thing off. Now, number one, it looks really cool in the film. They pull this off in a believable way that, yeah, okay, it's science fiction technology, but you buy it because it fits in with what you're seeing of the world. So these microbots are great, and of course, they're controlled by headgear worn on the head of an operator. And if you listen to the trailer before, they talk about that. It's, you know, it's kind of like ESP, but not really, because they're using technology and what is essentially a cybernetic brain enhancement to control something. So that in and of itself is very cyberpunk in nature, as is much of the movie. Now, as I said before, it's not just a cyberpunk movie. There are plenty of other elements to this movie that aren't cyberpunk. But I was just taken aback by how much cyberpunk was in that, because I did not expect that. I mean, I don't expect cyberpunk from Disney. They don't exactly do that sort of thing. And it came out really well. So before we get out of here, I'm going to leave stuff for you to see at the cinema. I'm not going to tell you everything about the movie. Like I said, no spoilers, but I am going to tell you to go check this movie out. I mean, don't wait for it to come out on Netflix or DVD or whatever. If you've got kids, or you've got, you know, access to children, you know, you've got nieces and nephews or things like that, and you think they might want to see this movie, believe me, they might want to see this movie. They will probably want to see this movie, and I think you should take them to see the movie. And if you don't have access to children of your own or of relatives or things like that, just go see it for yourself. There's plenty of grown-up humor in it. This is not just a kid's movie. It's quite Disney in that respect, that there is something there for everybody. So go check out Big Hero 6. I give it a cyberpunk librarian thumbs up, if such a thing exists. And hey, I think it's about time to get out of here myself. So thank you for tuning into this episode of Cyberpunk Librarian. I hope you enjoyed a little something different here, and it's something I've been meaning to try, sort of this review and look at different elements and aspects of the cyberpunk genre, because after all, you can't spell Cyberpunk Librarian without spelling cyberpunk. And hey, I like the title, but I also like the philosophy and the genre behind it. So if you did dig on this idea of doing a little review every so often of something within the cyberpunk genre, let me know. You can drop me a line on Twitter. I am at Bibrarian. That's Bibrarian. It's like librarian, but it starts with a B. Or you can hit me on Google Plus. I am google.com/plus Daniel Messer. Or you can hit me with the old SMTP method and mail with cyberpunklibrarian@gmail.com. Let me know, because, hey, I had a good time. And like I said, little something different, little something to change things up. The song you're currently digging on is Robotomy by Tortue Supersonic. Pick that up at the Free Music Archive, as well as the song that you heard earlier in the show, which was Lay Number 4 by G-Lo. And of course, the opening track is Belly Dance at Ibisu by Ryo Miyashita. Pick those up at the Free Music Archive at freemusicarchive.org. Great music, all kinds of genres. Pop on over there, find something you like, press play, and let it roll. I'm sure sooner or later you're going to get something you kind of like, you'll get something you kind of dig, and then you'll find something that you just can't live without. And hey, it's not called the Free Music Archive for nothing. You can download that stuff right there. If you're going to use it in a project, drop a little credit to the artist like I just did, because they got some great artists over there. freemusicarchive.org. Cyberpunk Librarian is hosted by The Archive, the Internet Archive at archive.org. Great people doing great things. Buzz on over there. You'll find all kinds of interesting stuff. And oh my God, ladies and gentlemen, I've talked about how they've got Let's Play videos of some classic video games. Well, they went and did one better than that. They now have classic video games themselves that you can play right in your browser. It has been an enormous time suck for me, and I love it. So buzz on over, archive.org. Great stuff from great people doing great things, preserving and saving the internet. And hey, that about wraps it up. I thank you for tuning in, letting your podcatcher of choice drop on this episode, and you didn't hit stop the very minute that you heard my voice kick off the show. So, hey, I hope to see you again in 2 weeks. We do this show usually every other Monday. Sometimes I get behind due to scheduling conflicts or something like that, but I try and get it out every Monday, you know, every other Monday morning at around 8 o'clock Arizona time. That's GMT or UTC minus 7. So if you want to do the math on that, that would be great. And the nice thing is Arizona doesn't do that daylight savings time stuff. So Arizona is always UTC minus 7. It's great. I absolutely love it. But hey, thank you for tuning in. I will see you in the next 2 weeks at some point. My name is Daniel Messer, your friendly neighborhood cyberpunk librarian, just reminding you that you don't have to be high-tech to be low-budget, but it certainly helps if you're a cyberpunk. I'll see you next time. Take care. We'll be right back.